Today is February 28th, 2018, and this is episode number 451 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, rock and roll demigod. Get the full story out. Cover.
I laugh because it's true.
It's not true at all. It's so true. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, head us over. Well, you can head us over too if you want, but you should head over to facebook.com/group/context machine.
That's a great recovery. I don't think anyone caught it.
Oh, no, no. Super slick.
Speaking of super slick, Mr. Rock and Roll Star.
Demigod.
Demigod. I'm sorry, Mr. Rock and Roll Demigod. My bad.
Should we actually post this in the show notes?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. So, can we tell people what we're posting?
Yeah, let's tell people what we're posting. In 1987, I was in a...
In a rock and roll band, as a
rock and roll band, with two chaps in Grand Junction, Colorado, and we were called the Mannequins. And there is a video performance. Like, apparently, there were handheld video cameras in 1987.
Of course, there were. They were big.
And there's a video performance, and I had a copy of this and thought it was and have lost that copy. But apparently John James, who is today, he is a local, he's got a studio. He actually does a lot of local production on the Western Slope in Colorado. Very, very talented musician, extremely talented musician. He was always a much better musician than me. And remains a much better musician than me, and also very talented behind the mixing boards and whatnot. But anyway, he apparently also had a copy, which I didn't realize, and he digitized it and cleaned it up and posted it to YouTube,
which is just awesome. It is so cool, and you are so young.
It is so something. I'm not really sure cool is the right. I don't know if that means the same thing that I think it means. But it is certainly very 1987.
Oh, it's very 1987. I mean, you've got your collar's popped, isn't it?
I think my collar is popped. I don't know what I'm wearing. I my hair is. I was trying to do for the longest time. I tried to do a Ziggy Stardust with my hair. I really wanted to look like early David Bowie. And did not succeed because I don't have David Bowie's hair, but. But yeah, my collar spot. Here's a fun fact. You probably didn't watch to the end, and I don't encourage anyone to watch to the end. But I'm playing through a Borrowed Anthers, another band that played before us, and those guys, they were a punk band, and they were very kind to let me use their amp because it was a Marshall, and yay Marshall, and we closed with My Generation because. Whatever.
Because and, why wouldn't you?
Because why wouldn't you? And because I was always bummed that Keith Moon didn't get a drum solo during My Generation, unless of course you count the entire song. So our drummer takes a drum solo at the end of My Generation, and then I do a feedback thing, and the guy who owns the amp is watching very nervously. he's kind of hovering. I think he might have been a little worried about what I might do to his amp, but of course I didn't do anything bad. But anyway, yeah, good times. He just posted this last night. I'm not proud of the performance by any stretch of the imagination, but I am delighted by seeing this, you know, like time capsule look back into my youth.
I think it's fantastic, and I'm so glad that it's out there for all of us to watch. I had time to get through the first song, and I stopped it, not because I was like, okay, that's all I can handle.
I don't know, man. I think you made a good call. I mean, I don't, honestly, I don't even recommend anyone actually make it through the first song. I think you'll probably get enough with just the first few seconds.
It's epic.
It's on YouTube for the world to see, and we'll have a note in the show links, maybe, or show a link in the show notes. There we go.
Yeah, it was just awesome.
All right. So today's topics, other than Vanity Looks Into the Past, include two topics from said Facebook group. So we want to thank our members there who are joining us in the conversation. It's so very much appreciated.
Yes.
First topic, though, mm-hmm. is Apple's clinics. These clinics that they're opening up. And we were going to talk about that yesterday on the Daily Observations, but we ran out of time.
Yeah, well, with yesterday's conversation, it just seemed so wrong to cut it off. So it'll be great to have the conversation here.
Mm-hmm. Topic two.
Oh, topic two. We're going to talk about Vero and social networks.
Vero and social networks. I think the question on Facebook was whether or not Vero is viable. We'll get to that.
We will get to that.
And then we had another question about Apple and security, with in particular the supposed Cellebrite claim that they can get into every iOS device back to, I think, iOS 5. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. That sounds right.
So we're going to talk about that too. And those are our topics, and we appreciate you joining us today. So let's dive into it.
Okay. Do we want to do them in that order, or is there something that you just really want to hit first?
I don't know, man. My OCD gets going and
do you want to go alphabetical?
No, it needs to be in the order that we listed them.
Oh, all right.
They were listed for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Here's the truth. I didn't want to have Apple Clinic, Apple Security, and then Vero. I felt like we needed to divide up the apples. So that's the reason that they're in that order. I got a snort out of you. That's great. Man, I win.
Oh, my God.
I win. All right. So Apple Clinic. So this is the new. I am fascinated by this development. Fascinated. Utterly fascinated about this development.
All right. So I want to know why you're fascinated. But for the people that may not know what we're talking about yet,
yep.
Here's the quick backstory. Apple has a thing called AC Wellness, which I'm assuming stands for Apple Care Wellness.
If it doesn't stand for Apple Care, I'm going to be pretty now. Pissed.
Yeah. So what Apple's doing is opening up their own healthcare primary care provider clinics for their employees. So they're starting off with two out in California, and I'm totally blanking on where they are, but Silicon Valley-ish. And so this will be where Apple employees go for healthcare instead of using another insurance service and going to some other clinics.
To be fair, I imagine it's where they can go.
Okay, sure. Yeah, there won't be any, I'm sure there won't be any contractual obligation that says this is the only place you can go for healthcare.
Well, it's conceivable that Apple's health plan will be written in such a way that if you go out of network, you're screwed. That's conceivable. However, I would be flabbergasted if that were the case.
I would too.
Let's dig into this because it's just fascinating to me. First of all, let's start with the difference between Apple and Jeff Bezos and the bank.
So, yeah. Okay. So you're talking about the Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan.
Yes.
Team up to do their own healthcare thing for employees.
Yes. And, okay. And I have enormous amount of respect for Warren Buffett. I have a grudging respect for Jeff Bezos and screw JP Morgan, but that's beside the point. Three giants, three very wealthy, 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 wealthy giants, announced like a month ago that they were going to try to rein in their own healthcare costs by thinking differently about it.
Yeah. So at a minimum, they're coming up with their own self-insurance system.
Yeah, it's going to be data driven. That's the thing that they didn't really say what they were going to do. But what they did say is that they were going to be using data to try to, you know, make things better.
Right. And we don't know if that involves their own clinics or not. But yeah, data is a big part of this.
And there's a lot to be. Okay. There is a lot to be said by any company large enough of taking its own health insurance, its own health costs under its own roof. A lot to be said about that, because, you know, when you've got enough employees, you essentially have, you essentially have enough that you could, the costs of the few can be mitigated by the money spent in the name of the many.
That's how insurance works.
That's how insurance works. That is insurance in a nutshell. However, the insurance company is out there trying to make a profit and usually successfully, but you know, what else? And these companies taking that onto their own roof means that money that would have been a profit for someone else could stay in their pockets.
Or stay in their healthcare system. But
sure.
Yeah, it's not.
Oh, I like that's so cute how optimistic you are and you whatnot. Know,
There's so little optimism in the world today. I'm going to make it up where I can.
Yeah. Anyway, so stay in their pockets. I'm going to stick by my solution. And now here's Apple. And we know that Apple has been wanting to disrupt the healthcare industry. And that's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is not about Apple trying to disrupt the healthcare industry. What this is about is not only taking their, at least some, if not all of it wouldn't be all of their employee healthcare costs, because Apple can really only reasonably do this wherever they have an employee density large enough to make it reasonable.
Right. So around their corporate headquarters.
Austin, mm-hmm. maybe in Arizona where they've got another facility. And wherever this new headquarters is going to be. That they're built, not headquarters, but the new campus that they're building is going to be. If there's a town that has three Apple stores, it's not going to have an Apple clinic, I would imagine.
I would be stunned if it did. Yeah.
So not only can Apple take a good portion of its costs under its own house, in the same way that in a similar way that, you know, those other companies are wanting to do. But Apple can also, theoretically at least, offer some best in class care. And if you're an employee and you have access to that, are you going to want to leave?
No, of course not. I mean, benefits, especially like healthcare benefits, there are people that stay in jobs
just for insurance. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the paycheck is essentially the bonus they get.
Now, imagine having a clinic where when you need to go see, I don't know how, maybe Apple's going to screw all this up. Doesn't seem likely, but it's possible, right? And I don't know exactly what Apple's planning here, but imagine a facility where you get to go see your doctor when you need to. Mm-hmm. And imagine a facility where the doctors are excellent and they're not overworked and you're not just, you know, you're not just a number. You're not worse. You're not just an insurance claim waiting to be made. And right. You can get the care that you need and want. And if Apple can provide that, it's going to make people want to stay Apple employees.
Sure.
And that is freaking genius on Apple's part.
Now the other benefits that Apple gets out of this, first, they're taking control of their healthcare costs for employees. So potentially money saving there. But then the other thing is they get to use their own employees as a test bed for their own healthcare initiatives and programs. So if they're doing something with data management or with, maybe there's something they do with the Apple Watch where it tracks your fitness in a specific way, and they want to see how that works before they roll it out to the public. Well, they now have their own clinics where they can be doing this stuff.
Well, theoretically, with voluntary participation.
Sure.
I don't think Apple's about to be making all of its employees into unwitting guinea pigs.
No, they're not going to be lab rats. But I mean, I could see where some of what they do would not be voluntary, you know, like with records management, everything goes into the Apple system because that's what they use. So they can test things with healthcare and fitness data internally and then roll it out to the public later on.
At the top of the segment, I said this was not about disrupting the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. But what you just said, or the things you just said,
it's about disrupting the healthcare industry.
Made me rethink everything, because what if AC Wellness turned into a company open to the public?
Okay, that would be huge.
And the Apple could actually be going into the darned healthcare industry, providing direct care for a fee, but you know, with their own philosophy in terms of data management. And
can you imagine walking into a clinic and they say, "So what's your Apple ID?" You know, Apple has a thing for disrupting markets.
Yeah.
And right now we are in a place in the United States where there's a lot of talk about the state of the healthcare industry. So, you know, if that's what Apple's looking to reinvent, holy crap.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big deal. Now, I do have a bit of a concern here.
Okay.
And it's not about, I mean, this is more like a sort of like meta level, holistic level concern.
Okay.
And like, you know, is this the first step towards rich corporations providing best in class care where everybody else cannot afford or get access to best in class care? And it could, that actually is possible, whether or not that even that's what Apple is intending, but that is conceivable. Huh. And that worries me. I sure wish, I personally advocate for a single payer healthcare system in the United States, like the rest of the freaking developed world.
I would be totally fine with that too.
And I wonder how that would play with Apple. Like, they're opening clinics and they, you know, the Apple board and executive management has to have an opinion on whether or not we are headed towards a single payer healthcare system.
That seems reasonable. I mean, if they're in a place where they have the website up, they've been hiring staff, they've had people from Stanford Health Clinics on staff for months already. They're thinking long term. So sure, they probably have a very solid idea about where they think we're going with
health. Yeah, I wonder how that would work. You know, how would company owned clinic? You know, this is essentially a company store for healthcare.
I was thinking that same thing.
So, you know, how does that work within a single payer system? But we don't have a single payer system, and you know, Apple probably isn't.
Well,
yeah, I don't really know how that figures into their plans.
Well, in some countries, you have the option of use the single payer system, but if you want to pay extra, then you can choose other doctors to go to.
Yeah, right. Or there's also supplemental insurance. Mm-hmm. I know that's how, for instance, that's how Australia works. They have got a very excellent healthcare system, but you can. You can pay for additional coverage too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right. So anyway, it's all very interesting. And it is a surprising move. It was a surprising announcement. story actually. Was it broken?
No, it was broken. But it's funny because it's not like Apple was directly trying to hide this, because the website's been out there, and the website even says that this is for Apple, the whole AC Wellness website, and the job listings that are out there. It's not like Apple was hiding any of that stuff. They just didn't say publicly, hey, we're doing this and it's launching this spring in a press release. But if you go to the AC Wellness website, that's exactly what it says. This is healthcare for Apple employees, and it's launching in spring 2018.
Super interesting.
Yeah, I swung by the TMO health clinic yesterday, picked up another bottle of bourbon.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
mind you, we're not paying for it.
I know. So. This is a really crappy healthcare program.
It really, really is.
Yeah. The upside is I get to choose the brand of bourbon.
This is true. We let you do that.
Thanks. That's swell.
Oh, goodness gracious. It's funny because it hurts.
Not anymore. I drank that pain away.
Oh, that's good. All right. Well, that's solid. That's solid. All right. So let's head to
I'm not helping Facebook. You. I just want to see what you say. Oh, Facebook.
Well, I got a text message. You see, I was responding. So I was multitasking poorly.
I see where your priorities are.
Yes, this is true. So we had a question from a longtime listener who said, possible ACM show topic, Vero.
Say the name again, because you actually cut out, and I feel bad that they don't get to hear their name.
Did I cut out, really?
Yeah, but just on the name. It was weird.
Huh, Quentin James.
Hey, Quentin.
Longtime listener. Yep, been a longtime listener. He said, a possible ACM show topic, Vero, can it ever rival Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter? Is it a credible alternative? Personally, I like the idea that we're not the product, and I'd be prepared to pay a subscription to keep it ad-free and to protect user data only if it became popular and reliable. Catch 22, I guess.
You know, can I just cut right to the chase with my opinion?
Well, sure.
All right. Vero is not viable. It's been around since 2015. It hasn't gained traction until this week, when people like started flipping out. OMG, have you heard about Vero, the new thing? It's been around for 2 years with a crappy interface and an unreliable service. And there are people that are now questioning the people that are behind the company. And
well, have you researched any of that?
So what I have read about what's going on is that the guy,
where'd you read, and how credible is the story?
Fortune.
Okay. And opinion Fortune, column or a news piece?
It was a news piece.
Okay, go ahead.
And there's several other out there too, but so the guy that started this, he was like the son of if I had this in front of me, I could actually tell you much better. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Let's see. He's a billionaire Lebanese businessman, son of the assassinated former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. And he has he's talked very openly about the network to all kinds of news networks, including CNBC. He didn't like what was out there, and so he decided that he needed to start something new. So that's when this launched in 2015. Now, the concept is great. It's about relationships first, and it's designed to be a lot like Instagram. Then there's the prior to this stuff that now has people freaking out. And it's the thing related to the company where he was deputy CEO and vice chairman. It's called Saudi Oger. And that's where his family got their wealth. They made this company. The company is now out of business. But they had to deal with, at one point, 31,000 complaints of non-payment of wages from employees from this construction company. And ultimately, the Saudi Arabian government, they had to come in and give food and living supplies, you know, places to live, water, to all of these workers, because they weren't getting paid at all. So apparently, there's a Reuters thing that I just found. Oh, wow. So back in 2016, there were reports about the employees living in labor camps, and they were often denied access to food and water and medical care. So these are the things that are popping up in the past couple of days after Vero went viral, and now people are like freaking out. So regardless of what the service can offer, I think that is going to be overshadowed by the owner's history, and people are already starting, ironically, on Twitter, campaigns telling people, delete your Vero account.
Yeah, which, you know, okay. So, I mean, yeah. You know, how much, you know, okay. So all of those reports are very disturbing. All the more so if true. Yeah. Well, disturbing if it's not true too, but for other reasons. I don't know what to say about that.
Well,
I'm not at all happy about that kind of history. That's just terrible. I love the idea of a social network that is where I'm not the product, as Quentin noted.
Yeah. And that's part of the idea behind Vero, is that you are not the product. You pay a subscription fee, and not yet, but at some point they're going to start charging new users a subscription fee.
The plan was the first 1 million people got to be free for life.
And
the problem is they like ramped up probably way earlier than they were thinking. With the new attention this week.
Yeah. So if they've been around since 2015, and they don't have 1 million users yet, I mean, that's a very quiet ramp up. And then, I'm a little concerned that if they've been around since 2015 and they've had at least 2 years to work on their infrastructure, and it's not at a point where it can handle their current load, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when
I remember the early days of Twitter with fail whales all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Forgot about that. So anyway, because they've been experiencing disruptions, they are extending the free for life offer past 1 million people because they have crossed 1 million people. And clearly they're, you know, trying to work on getting that infrastructure in place to handle the load, scaling everything up. And from there, it's merely a question of whether or not it ever actually takes off. And then, of course, the question of the owner.
Right. So is this just the next Elo and the next Peach? Oh, my God. Peach just popped in my head. Do you remember Peach?
Don't even remember Peach.
Exactly. Peach was huge for like a week, and
the alternatives are huge for a week.
Apparently people are still using Elo, and I know this because occasionally I get notification, like I have a new follower or something. And I'm like, wait,
yeah, I occasionally get that too. Cause I'm on Elo, but I don't use it. I mean, heck, I'm on Facebook and I don't use it except for the context machine.
Right.
And TMO.
So,
well, no, I don't use it personally. I've got, you know, tons of friends, but I never go see what's going on unless someone directs me to something.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think that's how a lot of people are using Facebook. I mean, there's a lot more that are using it in other ways, but yeah, I think there's a lot of people where Facebook is a tool, and that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if Vero can be viable. I would suggest that anyone who is interested in finding out that they get an account despite the campaign.
And I will give you the fair warning to go along with that account. Canceling your or getting rid of your account isn't as simple as just clicking a delete my account button. You have to do a special request process through Vero asking them to delete your account. So it is a little bit involved, just so you know up front.
And they are very keen on getting your access to your contacts, and they swear that they're never going to use it for anything nefarious. I am withholding that.
I am withholding my contacts as well, and I get that little pop up on a very regular basis in the app.
Yeah, they got a lot to prove before I'm going to give you access to my contacts. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if we're really answering the question. I think
I answered very clearly from my perspective.
Yeah, but you didn't back it up.
All right. Well,
I
backed it up.
I definitely get where you're coming from. The reality is that it is proven incredibly difficult for every would-be Facebook or would-be Twitter to gain any traction.
Well, okay. So we have the inertia here. And in this case, the inertia is people that are using Facebook or Instagram. Those are the two big ones that I see, especially Instagram, as parallels for Vero.
I like that you could share books, though. I mean, you can
post share all kinds of content. It's a really great idea. So, you know, it kind of has an Instagram, Snapchat. What's the Goodreads?
Owned by Amazon these days.
Oh, Goodreads is Amazon. That's right.
Yeah, for years now.
Yeah. So it has a little bit of a feel of all these different services. But, I mean, the bottom line is, if you're already using Instagram or you're already using Snapchat, why would you want to switch over to a service that
Because you don't want to be the product.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be the product. I mean, that's the thing. If there is enough momentum, I mean, here's the reality, Jeff. If Vero can take its current momentum and turn that into actual active users, it does have a shot.
Okay. Well, to finish the thought that I was popping out was that it has a really bad interface. So the user experience is not good. And if you want to have momentum to get beyond what Instagram, Snapchat, services like that offer, you need to offer something that's better across the board than what they have. And while privacy is a big thing, there's a lot of people that really don't care about that when they have an interface that gives them what they want. I mean, look at the number of people that gladly use Facebook and hand over all their contacts.
Absolutely. I think I can't remember if I mentioned it here. I know I've mentioned it elsewhere, but I've been playing a game that every once in a while says to me, and I quote, "Connect with Facebook to protect your data." Just like you sirs are unclear on the concepts here.
I do not think these words mean what you think they mean.
Exactly. I guess I kind of have to respect just how insidiously evil that pitch is because, my point is that, yes, you're right. Most people don't care. This is an obviously established fact. I think there is, however, growing backlash over the way Facebook was handling political ads during the last U.S. election.
Yes, that's going to be a black eye for Facebook for a little while. I think they'll recover from that, but it's it's definitely.
Well, I think I think they're likely to recover just because of inertia.
Sure.
To channel what you were saying earlier. But what I actually hope is that they reform that particular issue. I'm not going to hold my breath.
I'm not going to hold my breath for it, especially now that there's the, what's that amazing piece of prehistoric artwork? It was the Venus, sculpture. It's like Winnipeg or something like that. I'm embarrassed because this is something that I know, and I'm just totally drawing a blank right now. But the point is, Facebook is blocking photographs of this sculpture. So it's a sculpture of the Mother God. So it's a Venus sculpture, and it's prehistoric, and so it's this nude woman that's very large, very round. And so you can see her her big breasts, and she has like sort of like this basket thing on her head, and so
the point is that she's nude.
Yeah, but it's not even like a factual representation of a human, and Facebook is blocking this image as pornography. So, you know, and their own policies say, look, nudity as part of art is acceptable, yet they're blocking this. So if they can't even sort out how they're allowing or blocking pieces of art, then how can we hope that they're going to,
you know, what we're witnessing here? We're witnessing the Facebook and Google both running smack dab up against the limitations of not having people make decisions.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it gets even better because in the case of this piece of art, with Facebook, people have contested the pulling of it multiple times, which means that people at Facebook have become involved and still said no.
Hmm. That's weird.
It's very weird. So this does not instill confidence in me. But back to the bigger picture with the whole Vero thing, what I'm seeing here is that there's this backlash because people are getting very frustrated and fed up with the social networks that we have today and the way they operate. So
yep.
When there's something that sounds fresh and new and might be great, we get this viral explosion. And so the one that I'm expecting at some point in the next 12 months is going to get a viral explosion is Microblog. Mm. And
you mentioned this in the pre-show, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay. So Microblog, it's micro.blog, is, you know, like Twitter in the sense that you do your short posts and you can post other content with your posts. You follow other people, and it's free, but then they have subscription tiers where you get other things like you can have your own unique domain for your microblog account, or you can pay for cross posting with other social networks. And, you know, it's just built in. And I got to see this first at Worldwide Developer Conference in 2017. And they weren't actually presenting it at WWDC, but developers from the service were there and they were talking at one of the satellite conferences. And so I got a demo from Gene McDonald, and you know, it's this cool service. And I signed up for it and didn't really start using it much, but with everything else that's been going on, I thought, okay, I need to experiment with this and learn more about it. But the point is that this is yet another service that's coming up because people are so dissatisfied and frustrated with the state of social networks today.
Right. I was muted. I'm registering as we.
I'm Jay Gamut. So you can find me and we'll be friends.
Create a new microblog for me. Includes a free 10-day trial. Cross-posting a personal domain name, themes, pages, an iOS app, Mac app, and more. Just $5 a month. Are they only iOS and Mac?
Because
that's a problem.
I don't know. I thought you. No, you can do web as well.
Well, yeah, it needs to be on Android and Windows, though.
So, but as far as apps for other platforms, I don't know. I haven't bothered to check.
Right. So I have.
But still, this service isn't even a year old, and they did a very soft launch. So I'd consider this one a beta still. So if there aren't,
it's very clearly modeled after Twitter in a very proper way, very good way.
Yeah, it's a very clean look.
What's the character count?
I have no idea. Location. I never pay attention on Twitter. I just write short things and that's it.
I'm at geektales.micro.blog. It's probably going to be another one that I don't ever use. So there's that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try using microblog more just to get a feel for it because when I saw it initially, I was like, wow, this is nice. This feels fresh and not angry.
So they claim to be able to help stop or to not spread fake news. How are they doing that? Are they actually checking over posts?
That's a good question.
I mean, these platforms have been used by propagandists in part because they can. Right? There is no human intervention on stuff.
Yeah.
So how would they? Now I'm not getting the original. Let me see. Let me go back to another browser and go to micro.blog. Today's social networks are broken. Ads are everywhere. Hate and harassment are too common. Fake news spreads unchecked. The better way, a network of independent microblogs, short posts like tweets, but on your own website that you can control. Micro.blog is a safe community for microblogs. Safe community. A timeline to follow friends and discover new posts, hosting built on open standards. Yeah, I don't see exactly how they would combat fake news. And mind you, I have enormous respect for Jane McDonald. She's just a fantastic human being. And the fact that she's involved in this makes me think very highly of it. It's one thing to, suggest without actually saying that you're going to stop the spread of fake news, but I would like to know how that's possible.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can get the microblog people to talk with me.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And I want you to do a story.
And
do a story for TMO.
Yeah. We'll get some good info because your questions are totally valid. And my experience with this is limited enough that while I like how not angry it is and how clean it is, most of my answers today have to be, I don't know to questions about the service.
Nope.
So we'll fix that.
Designed to work with the open web. It's built on RSS and into microblogs. It's about pulling together short posts and making them more useful and easier. It prioritizes both the safe community of microblogs, the freedom to post to your own site. See, I don't see how you can prioritize both of those things.
Well, we'll find out how.
Right.
But yet again, it's another example of people looking at what we have today in social networks and thinking there's got to be something better.
There's got to be something better, yeah. Until people are willing to pay, we're not going to get anything better. That's a hard fact.
Yeah.
Until people are willing to pay to not be the product, we're not going to get better than Facebook, and we're not going to get better than Google. We're not even going to get better than Twitter. And I happen to like Twitter. I also happen to like Instagram.
I really like Instagram.
But I am the product of Instagram.
Yes. You know why I like Instagram more than the other services right now? It's because it's not angry.
I've seen some angry stuff. But
not
by and
like
large,
on Twitter and Facebook. I mean, those have both become just like cesspools of angry, just acidy spit people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. And maybe it's just I'm lucky that the people that I'm following on Instagram, they do photos of like cool nature scenes and really neat architecture and the fun trips that they take.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been like I've discovered HoboCoin on Instagram.
Wait, HoboCoin?
HoboCoins.
The romanticized homeless population of the United States.
I assume that's where the name originally came from. Here's the deal: I haven't actually researched any of this, so I'm like doing complete conjecture. Sweet. So HoboCoins are a U.S. coin. Well, I suppose one could use coinage from another country, but in general, this seems to be a U.S.-based thing. So you take a U.S.-based coin, and then you carve your own art onto the face of it. You're defacing it, which is illegal. But, you know, whatevs. And Hope Hicks is resigning from the White House. It's breaking news right now.
Huh. Too many white lies.
Too many white lies. Anyway, so yeah, so like this amazing. I'm gonna send you. Matter of fact, I'll include a note, a link, in the show notes to some great HoboCoins. But I'm gonna send one to you right now, Jeff, so that you can be blown away. How's that?
I am so excited. I'm ready to be blown away.
I am going to find this. I also, by the way, I found Dexter rings. Did I ever show you Dexter rings? I'm no. Stalling for time while I look a good hobo coin. Oh, here's one. And this is far from the best one I've ever seen. So I'm texting it to you right now. Check that out. That was an Indian head nickel.
Whoa.
That was an Indian head nickel in 1934.
Holy crap. That's amazing. Right?
That far from the best one I've seen. Far from the best one I've seen, and that one's great.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
So I'm assuming that this was a form of art that started with the hobo community in the 30s. It's a coincidence, by the way.
I like the idea.
It's a coincidence that it's a 1934 nickel in this case. So when I said the 30s, but I that it was something that they would do because they could. I don't know, but I haven't actually done any research on the etymology of the term, but they're called hobo coins. I've seen them done on, you know, Morgan silver dollars and quarters and nickels. Most, at least from the brief exposure I've had on Instagram, several of these amazing artists.
Yeah, so
we'll include, I guess actually what I should do is probably just include a link to the feeds of those artists rather than individual coins.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
There's three of these guys that I follow, and there's more out there for sure. And you know, they're engravers, they're metal engravers.
Yeah. I mean, the detail is just amazing. I mean, there's these curved feathers, and you can see the detail in the feathers on this. And this is in
the one I sent you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, look at that. You can see the details on the feathers. Yeah. There's one where it was Santa Claus with the scroll. Santa Claus and another figure scroll on, are, and his scroll had words, actual words carved into it. So wow. I mean, it was just teeny tiny. And the other color, because he's working inlaid copper.
Okay. Yep. That explains.
That's why you have some color.
Reddish hat.
Yes. And sometimes these guys will actually inlay gold, different colors of gold, even, and copper, you know, et cetera, into these coins.
Wow.
And, you know, the numismatist in me shudders at defacing these coins, but they pick coins that are in not good condition
and then turn them into something beautiful.
Something amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is just one of the things I consider my life to be a better place knowing what hobo coins are and having seen this artwork. And I discovered it only because of Twitter, of Instagram. I mean,
yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Let's move on to topic number three, which is the Apple security, right?
Right. And if I had been not so wrapped up in our conversations today, I would have been telling you how much time we have left.
We have 10 minutes. 10 minutes left. All right. So Jason on our Facebook group.
Hey, Jason.
Facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. He said, possible ACM show topic. If one of the bastions of iOS is no longer viable, i.e. security, what would that do to the market when an iPhone is as insecure as Android? Or is this different in terms of privacy on the iOS platform itself, since this article seems to indicate your device has to be sent off for hacking versus the notion of all your data being snooped real time?
That's a very important distinction. So this is not the same thing as all your data is open and unprotected all the time. And yeah, this is a matter of having to hook up your iPhone to special equipment, running special software to get at the data that's on it. So
yeah, the background of the story is that Cellebrite, the Israeli company that first popped up in the mainstream news in the FBI's fight with Apple over Saeed Farouk's work phone,
mm-hmm,
after the San Bernardino massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cellebrite is apparently claiming that they can get into like every iPhone back to the iPhone 5 or back to iOS 5. Is that like iOS 5 to iOS 11?
I think that's it. iOS 5 to iOS 11.
And which may or may not be true. It probably is. But there is a world of difference between, you know, there's a lot of nuances here. For one, there, like I saw one person say, actually, was that on that? Yeah, Morgan said the entire concept that the government wasn't able to investigate some of last year's terrorist iPhones was a joke. Of course, there are tech guys who could do it. It was a nice kudos for Apple to promote themselves. I felt it hard to believe that tech guys couldn't access the cell phone. All cellular Apple with their OS system can make it hard, but nothing is safe on the internet. Yeah, fair point, sort of, I guess, but there is a difference between a person or a company having figured out a zero-day exploit,
mm-hmm,
to get into a device and that exploit being available to everyone, even to Apple. Just because it exists doesn't mean that Apple has it. As a matter of fact, if it exists, you can assume Apple doesn't have it because Apple would have patched it.
Right.
So Apple couldn't get into its devices, and not just any tech guy can get into these devices. As a matter of fact, I mean, it's, you know, Cellebrite is putting an enormous amount of effort into creating and discovering and probably buying zero day exploits on the open market, just like the intelligence services of and criminal organizations do the world over.
Yeah.
And what's disgusting to me,
they're spending a lot of money on this.
Right. And then they sell it theoretically to governments.
Yeah.
So they sell access to it.
Service.
They sell it as a service to governments. And theoretically, those governments, we would mostly who knows?
I'm glad you decided to stop because you realized what you were saying. Yeah.
And what's disgusting to me is that Apple isn't notified of these things. I mean, this company is profiting off of ensuring that everybody is less secure. And again, the issue here is not governments being able to access these devices with a warrant. The issue here is that a vulnerability known to one is in some ways open to all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, celebrate finding and hoarding all these zero day. I find it atrocious personally. I realized the company wouldn't exist if they weren't doing just that. So, you know, they wouldn't be developing these zero day exploits if they weren't exploiting them.
Yeah.
But I there is also, and Jeff already headed down this path a little, but there is a world of difference between a company being able to get into a device through an exploit and a device being inherently insecure because it is one giant exploit, one giant vulnerability, you know, essentially what Android is. So even with Cellebrite having this ability, iPhones are still going to be a lot, obviously not completely safe, than any given Android device.
Yeah, Apple's put a lot of effort into their secure enclave and into creating an encryption system that no one except the owner of the device can get into.
Right.
And
and unless, of course, you have some kind of exploit.
Right. Yes. I think that's great because from the beginning, this system has been designed to keep your stuff private. Well, that's actually not true because in the beginning, none of your stuff was actually encrypted on your iOS device. That didn't come along until iOS 4.
7 or 8, right?
Oh, it was that late?
It was later than 4.
Oh. I don't think it was as late as 7 or 8. So let's go with 5 or 6.
I don't know. I think it was 7 or 8. When did Apple encrypt iPhones? Top men here, by the way.
Top men.
Top men. So Apple expands data encryption under 8.
Okay.
I think it was 7.
Wow.
At least 7 when they made it the default.
Okay. Well, time flies.
It does indeed. I don't know. To Jason's question, there is still a difference, in my opinion, between. I don't think that Cellebrite being able to do it anyway knocks iPhone down to the same level of Android security. To Morgan's point, Cellebrite is news because they're able to do something that no one else that we know of can do. So it's not just any tech guy can get into these things and these phones, it really is difficult to get into a properly encrypted phone. And it's also difficult to get into a properly encrypted Android device. Again, absent, you know, all the malware and unpatched older versions of Android that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think Apple gets dinged for any of this stuff. I think that Cellebrite's mere existence is an embarrassment to Cellebrite. I think that governments willingly being complicit with Cellebrite to use these exploits rather than helping to disclose the vulnerabilities and make all devices safe from all the bad guys, I think that's also an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my take, man.
And to bring it all the way back around to the question, the first part of the question, which included, what about resale value? this isn't going to impact resale value of iPhones. And I think the big part of that is actually completely unrelated to security. It's because people love iPhones. They think they're cool and iPhones hold their value well. So regardless of how secure an iPhone is, it will still sell well because people want them.
Yeah. Most people don't care about security. They just don't care.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think it doesn't impact them. Why would someone want to get at their data? They're just one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. I don't feel like we addressed this topic very well. I feel like I don't know what it is, what else it is I'm wanting to say, but I don't really think we addressed this topic all that well.
Well, then maybe we'll have to come back to it next week.
Yeah. I maybe our listeners can chime in and either, you know, spot what we missed or ask some additional questions or point out some additional things that, you know, maybe could have been thinking of. Chime in.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know because, Brian, if you're feeling like we've missed something, there's something we haven't said, then that's good enough for me. There's still more to this conversation. We need to figure out what it is and then we'll have it.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're out of time.
Punch that button.
Okay. Hold on. Here we go. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is recorded by Boom just for TMO, and that's all for.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.